What's the next item? Shopping trolleys.
Page 207 in my agenda.
Yeah.
Four, version two.
I've got a 224. 224 has the majority, I'm afraid.
224.
You're not down with the year. So,
No, this is the.
Who would like to move something? Councillor Gillespie.
Thanks, your worship. I'm happy to move as is. We've made some changes to assist with the LRC and hopefully the feedback from the secretary will be appropriate for the committee members. So the sooner we can move forward, the better.
Councillor Hall.
Gladly seconded, Mr. Mayor. Minor changes are not significant. And as we know from the attempted bylaw through for cats, if we don't actually try to accommodate the upper house of the state government at this point, it will fail and we'll end up with no bylaw at all, as we did with the cats. On that basis, I'm happy to support it. It's interesting that and sad that we had an email a few days ago that Councillor Carol Bowen's passed away. Well, she was one of the many councillors that banged on about shopping trolleys, as I have, Councillor Lescu has. And I think if she knew that this was actually going to come to fruition, she'd have a bit of a chuckle, I think, and be quite happy about that. So, and Councillor Clinton, seeing it, would be exactly the same.
Point is well made. Anyone speaking against? Do not put the motion. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. So, well, let's just deal with the first budget review. Councillor Telfer.
I'll move as per the recommendations. I asked a lot of questions and I got a lot of good answers. I believe it is appropriate, given that the asset sustainability reserve is now so low, that the financial statements, the 3.66 million, goes across into the asset sustainability reserve. So I think it's a reasonable motion.
Good, Councillor Crossland.
I'd just like to thank Councillor Telfer for all those questions. That made it easier for me. Some good results from staff, and a lot of those savings, of course, are coming from staff achieving some great grants, which has reduced the ratepayers' costs. So, thank you.
I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour, raise your hand. Carried unanimously. Thank you. So we've got page 251. And thank you, Mr. Harding, for attending. Greyhounds. Now, Councillor Clancy.
I'd like to make this motion as written. I would like to note, though, it's not a rare and unique opportunity, as City of West Torrens offers this event once a month.
That's been moved. Is it seconded?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Clancy's right.
Councillor Hull, go ahead.
The Councillor of Alexandrina, I spoke to a contact down there, one of the event managers, and it's so successful that greyhounds are actually brought from the city down there. If you like, it's a little bit like accommodating special circumstances, because they're not allowed in public normally without a leash or a muzzle. Just like in the same way we entertained, and Councillor Lescu was responsible for this in many ways, was the small dog park, you know, where it provided an opportunity for small dogs to do their thing without the fear of being manhandled by bigger dogs. This is probably another extension of that, where we've got a listed species of dog that has to have a lead and a muzzle, and And the irony is that the greyhound, and I have plenty of experience with greyhounds when I was younger, they are quite a docile dog. And however, if they see a white little fluffy ball running around, they will instinctively chase it. And I think that for good reason, we have to actually exclude greyhounds from our general parks, our dog parks. But this is an opportunity for them. I think it'd be well received.
Councillor Duncan, did you wish to provide further information?
Yes, thank you. Just to continue with this, both Victor Harbour and West Torrens did trials only. It's not a standard thing as yet until it's passed through the dog and cat ward. And we had quite a lot of our residents asking for this particular event in the City of Marin, so this is why we've been pursuing it. And I think it's a great thing.
Thank you. A question to staff. Do we know what the catchment would be if we had a greyhound off-leash event? Any idea of where the greyhound population lives? But it might be available through Dog and Cat Management Board figures, for example. No? You're getting stunned signs. Mr. Delacunas.
Thank you, Chair. So to respond, look, we haven't done an address analysis, but we do have 213 registered greyhounds in Marion, so we think that'll be a fairly good catchment within our city for that attraction, for that event.
Thank you. And just a sort of an administrative question, is it something which people would register for, or would it simply be open the gates on that particular day and it's greyhounds only?
Thank you, through the Chair. Look, it's pretty well curated. There's pretty strict guidelines that we have to follow, including the learnings from the trials of the previously mentioned councils in regards to booking time slots, allowing a time for a cleanup to occur, and for space for other animals to move about. So it would indeed be invite and registration, especially given how we run any sort of public events these days of that size. We would be taking all precautions necessary.
I think part of themselves, but not so simple. Councillor Duncan?
I attended the West Torrens greyhound sessions, and they not just come from one area, they come all over the state for those particular events. Yes.
And I suppose that was my point, that we're obviously excluding a lot of local dogs on such a day, and I'm just curious to know, you know, to the extent we can cater for local greyhounds or animals from wider state. That may or may not matter to elected members, but I certainly want to make that inquiry if the motion is passed. Councillor Schilling?
I guess my question is there a way that we can give local greyhound owners more of a preference first? Say if you register by this date from the City of Marion, you get first bidding. Is there a way to do something like that to give our residents priority?
Mr. Delacunas.
Thank you, through the Chair. I guess in addition to my response before, it would generally be open to all. I think being a City of Marion resident and being involved in our community and looking at our social media or community news bulletins and invitations would put you in a pretty good place to be available. I perhaps wouldn't exclude it at this stage, and I think the demand could be met, and if we did have issues where residents were missing out in large numbers, that we could look to adjust that. But I think in the first instance I'd be happy to give preference to our residents by communicating with them adequately, and those that are available at the times that we decide we'll be able to attend, and I'm sure it'll be supported.
I think the news will spread through the greyhound like a greyhound. Councillor
Crossan. Yeah, just a follow on from that, and just to beat Councillor Garden, I'm sure was about to say the word marketing. Can we actually directly communicate with all our 213 greyhound owners to say this event is happening and please contact the organiser? At least then, if they do get to know about it, they can attend if they want to.
And that could be done before the broader publicity. Mr. Delacombs?
Yes, thank you. That's an approach we will take. Thank you.
Is it in order to ask a question?
Not really, but go ahead.
Would we have one of our inspectors there for this event?
I think it would certainly have staff attendance. Mr. Delacombs?
Yes, thank you. Look, the event support admin will be helped by the comms team. However, CSI staff are definitely required. It's part of the guidelines that CSI staff are in attendance and helping to manage the day's event.
I mean, I would give, you know, I'd ask that inspector to give a general warning to those attending that these greyhounds will travel at speed. And from experience, and I've still got the scars, they can hit you quite hard. So it's just got to say,
I think our inspectors can be trusted to be wary. Very well, I'll put it to the vote. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against? That's unanimous. Carried. Thank you. I'll beg your pardon, Councillor Telfer. So many hands to look at. That was carried by majority. Thank you. The procurement policy, again, you'll notice I circulated an email, admittedly only this morning, but I don't know if councillors wish to take that on board. I think a couple of pretty important points.
Mr. Mayor, I think your observations are good. I've got a couple of others I've picked up.
Should it be deferred then, Councillor Hull, so that your suggestions and mine considered by
staff? I can just flag mine very quickly. In the report, it talks about elected members. It scratches out elected members being involved. Now, I don't think we should be involved in buying pens and rules, but photocopies. But if we're talking about the next waste management contract, we certainly should have be a stakeholder in that. I've spoken to Mr. Lyons about this.
Yeah, so how do we sort of draw a line about what comes to council and what doesn't?
Major Lyons.
So I can state that we've received, I'll answer that question, we've received the mayor's comments today and we accept them all, they're listed on the board. Your comment is very, very valid. It doesn't look right, but all we've done is moved it into a different space. So on page 271, the same wording goes in the table above. Consider tender recommendations put forward by staff through council. So the wording's the same. And what does and doesn't come is stipulated in a procedure, which is referred to the procedure process by.
And probably the delegations would have a bearing on
that.
The other one was obviously Mr. Lyons, the RAP alignment.
Yeah, so I do have some additional wording that Ms. Moritz could bring up. She's highlighted it there, and it would be intended to go within principle 10. So on the, if we go to the non-tracks changes, that's page 261 online, and we would simply add this as an additional principle. But I'd flag that members haven't seen this wording, and you'd need to assess it and make a call about it. That's the bolder bit at the moment.
Yep.
Thank you.
Well, if members are willing to go ahead with those sort of principles,
is there a new motion
there?
Can someone
ring out? Yeah, I beg your pardon. So from the policy that was presented in the agenda, essentially the ideas were to, first of all, availability, there's a principle that talks about openness of opportunity. However, there have been cases where there's a local catering contract and the thing's advertised on bloody the Tenders SA website, which multinational corporations look at. So it's just a point that says publicised opportunities appropriate to the type and volume of the goods or services sought in addition to the Tenders SA website. So the next one is we've got an environmental factor there, principle 9, but it talks about businesses behaving in relation to the environment, rather than any reference at all to recycled goods. So it should be goods and services. There's an addition, which Councillor Hulse put forward, supporting national efforts to increase procured goods and services from Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander owned businesses. And the other one that I mentioned was where they've got may prefer local or firms that operate locally. Well, it just seems to me that anyone who gets a job here is going to operate locally. They might be based at Winfield. So I've suggested based locally. That's really what we want to do. And then I've gone a step further for your consideration and suggested that even if there's a 5%, up to a 5% price difference, that we should prefer recycled goods and companies that are based in the City of Marion. So there are a few points there, but you can either take as a package or we can pull it apart a bit. Councillor Possum.
Just a couple of questions, and I endorse all of those. I believe we already did do the slight consideration financially of local providers, if they were slightly higher. I don't know if this is a question staff can answer online, but I would firstly like to know is, does the proposed amendment where it's limited to 5% improve or disadvantage local contractors from what we were currently doing?
Yes, who could answer that?
So is Mr. Dunnicliffe, please?
Yes.
Mr. Dunnicliffe, go ahead.
Thank you. Through the chair, one of the things that we will also be looking to implement to support the focus on that will be the mandatory evaluation criteria, which will have specific weightings and scoring aligned to businesses that are located within the council district.
Thank you. My question was, if we limit the additional cost to 5%, is that more or less than you had originally been offering?
I'm just noting that in the policy before amendment, there's no reference to any special preference in that regard. Mr. Dunnicliffe.
Thank you, through the chair. That was going to form part of the procedures update that would support this, where we would have the document that shows how we would undertake that. The first point around the 5%, I think that forms part of the overall evaluation criteria that is set across a number of elements. 5% would give local business certainly a really good head start in that, and would be able to be a tiebreaker as such in regards to allocating business more towards local suppliers.
Well, I'd like to suggest that as a matter of governance, staff would have absolutely no right to deviate from the price, the best price, even if it's a foreign firm that has a terrible environmental record, unless it's in the policy, the public policy. And everyone who's been in for business at council should be aware of that. And they don't have access to the procedure. Even councillors most of the time don't have access to the procedure. So that's why we're talking about putting it in the policy. And I think from the fact an answer's been given at cross purposes to Councillor Crossland just confirms my reading of the current policy that there is no such preference given to local businesses.
Because that's what my understanding was, that we already did have a policy of preferential treatment, but we didn't know what that was.
So it may be in the procedure. I don't know what the view of governance is, but I think that's absolutely wrong, unless it is actually consistent with the policy, because the procedure is just there to implement the policy, not to put in extra things because it didn't feel like it. Ms. Waits, what do you think?
I would agree a guiding principle should be in the policy, not the procedure.
Okay.
And last question.
Ms. Crossan.
I know that we're restricted in some cases by legislation in what preferential treatment we can give. Is there an actual figure in which we can not go over, like 10% or 15%?
Mr. Dunford.
Through the chair, apologies, I just missed the last part of that question. Could you please repeat it?
At the moment, the policy would be, say, we will give local contractors preferential treatment, even if they're up to 5% higher. Legally, is there a figure we have to stay below to not breach any legislation?
Thank you, through the chair. I may have miscommunicated earlier. There would be a standalone evaluation criteria that would be focused on our local suppliers, which would form part of the overall corporate social responsibilities element. In that regard, there are no legislative elements as to how you would evaluate that, but it would form part of an evaluation criteria piece.
So it sounds like the clause in the phrase in the policy that says within the law actually is not going to restrain us. There's nothing unlawful about it, as I interpret the answer.
So if down the track we decided to increase that 5% to 10%, legally you can do that?
Well, I believe so, based on Mr. Dunford's answer. And also, I believe the state government has a similar tender benefit in place for South Australian businesses.
The only problem I have is that we never really get any feedback to if that policy is delivering the outcomes we want. So
could we put that as a question on notice, whether the alleged consideration of local businesses has actually produced result, say in the last 12 months?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. How many, Mr. Dannington, the very round figures, how many tenders do you deal with in the last 12 months?
Thank you, through the chair. In round figures in the last 12 months, there would have been approximately 35 tenders that we have released. Certainly, some of our reporting on expenditure within our local council shows that we are, we look at local council district and the greater SA, approximately 95% of our spend does stay within the state, and approximately 20% of that was within the local council district.
So,
thanks
for that.
Thank you.
If there's nothing further, we'll adopt that policy with the changes suggested. Move, Councillor Hull.
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, I welcome your input into this. With COVID, I think not only locally but nationally, sovereign industries need to be protected and nurtured because they're the ones that, in a pandemic or some other crisis, they're the ones that are going to look after us. And not only that, with stimulus post-COVID, we should be making sure that our local people are getting to work where possible. Up until now, the focus has been on the dollar. It is important. We all know that's important. We don't want to be ripped off. But at the same time, we want to look after our local industries and local workforce. And as you know, some councils have even used contractors from interstate. That is, to me, unacceptable. And really, prior to this night, our administration could have done that within the realms of reasonability of the previous policy, I think. And there wouldn't have been much we could say about it apart from complaining. This is a much better policy. And the contribution that I made with the Aboriginal community options is important. If we are to have a RAP, Reconciliation Action Plan, and make strong reference to this, we need to walk the talk. We need to include that in our policies that will uphold those expectations. So this is a better policy, Mr. Mayor, and I'll work on a second.
Is there a second, Councillor Seeker?
Yeah, thanks, Your Worship. I'd like to second the motion without further comment.
Thank you. Anyone against? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Dunningcliffe. So now, because, yeah, I think rather than take all five of these reports on block, we just deal with BMX and soccer on page 273.
Can I declare a potential conflict of interest as a member of CAP? I know it's been decided, but if it had variations, I'd be cool. So I need to leave.
Right, a perceived conflict as a CAP member where the BMX and soccer issues have gone to CAP. Now, any questions initially, members? I did have one, and that was raised with Mr. Lyons only late today, but where it refers to the City of Marion being responsible for all operating expenses for the facilities over the term of our lease from the state. I can understand why the state puts that in their lease with us, but I was uncomfortable with the fact that there was no note that in fact we are intending to pass on operating expenses to the clubs to whom we will sublease. I wouldn't want there to be a misunderstanding from the soccer or BMX club saying that you passed a council resolution tonight without thinking about it, saying that you're responsible for the operating costs, all the utilities and everything else. So I wonder what staff have done about that.
Mr. Summer, you with us, I understand that point that the Mayor's made. I think it's a good, worthy addition for a note to this. Are you okay with that?
I think you do, Chair. Ms. Zabu will answer that question. Thank you.
Through the Chair, I can answer. Essentially, this is the head lease arrangements in which we will take occupancy of the sites from the state government. As such, we'll have sublease arrangements that will come through in which a lot of the operating costs will be handed to the clubs in line with our standard council policy. I guess we could change the resolution to make it clear it's the head lease arrangements, whereby it removes any risk that the sublease arrangements is what essentially be handed to the clubs. They would lease it as a sublessee rather than us from the state government as a head lessee, if that would help.
Precisely what I was suggesting.
Is it better to put it the other way around, that the state government will not be responsible for operating? That's really
I believe is a sensible clarification.
That's really what we're trying to say, is that the state government is not responsible for capital expense or maintenance, or I think it's the minister's land, but I think state government would capture it.
I mean, this is essentially a report to note, but if you're going to note it, then it should be something that the community can look at and make sense of. So could that, Ms. Moritz, could that wording be changed in clause 2, notes that the state government will not be responsible for any. Thank you. Sorry, there was more to that sentence. Over the term of the lease. Well, yeah, so it's just changing the first part. Yeah, and you had there for the facilities. Thank you, Ms. Moritz. And can I just check in with Ms. Sum again? Is there anything that you see is wrong with putting it that way?
No, I don't see anything wrong with that at all. No, that's good.
Who would like to move board meetings? Councillor Crossland, seconded Councillor Duncan. Any comment? Anyone against? Then put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. It's carried unanimously. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, could I just flag that there is a few IT issues with this agenda today. Sarana sorted out one from me earlier, but this one is...
Point of order as to technology from Councillor Hull. He's getting a red screen. I hope that's not foreign interference.
Not all of us. It's a leftist thing.
Well, you can at least you can be reassured it's not just you, Councillor Hull.
It's not just me.
Everyone's getting up. What I was going to suggest, councillors, was that the remaining reports for noting to do with the LGA, KPIs, work health and safety, finance report, all very important, but they could be taken on block.
Could I just comment about the LGA one?
I intend to as well. We will have the opportunity, but they could still be taken on block.
Happy to move on then.
Councillor Crossland, seconded Councillor Masika. Did you wish to speak to any of those, either of you two? Councillor Hull, to make a comment before I report on the LGA proceedings?
Well, it's interesting that we just dealt with the procurement policy for our council, and there was an attempt made by the City of Barron, as I remember, as one of the parties. It only mentions the name of the councils in the report, to actually strive towards what Mr. Skull was involved with earlier with the group of councils to have strength in numbers with procurement, and that motion failed. So what we're doing is atypical in terms of trying to get good procurement policy and getting strength in numbers and economies of scale, I think is probably the right term. But and the other one is the allowance for those members whose increase was lost. So I'm starting to warm towards the LGA more these days. And there's some, although the procurement stuff, that's not necessarily the LGA's fault, because the members are the ones that voted that way. And it's, I think it gets back to the protectionism of the patches and not thinking outside the square in the best interests of the ratepayers, because we've already demonstrated by joining forces with other councils we can achieve great gains. So that was a bit disappointing to see that happen. Something tells me the LGA, correct me if I'm wrong, the LGA as an entity probably would be in the business of encouraging that.
Well, if we can take the opportunity to report on the proceedings relevant to us. As to collaboration, there are certainly some mayors in the room who are very keen on the idea, but there seems to still be a very entrenched culture, a lot of it seems to come from the chief executives, that there should not be collaboration between councils, that we should each do our own thing. And nobody should impinge on our territory, that sort of culture, which is not helpful. In terms of procurement, I'm pleased to report that LGA Procurement, which has been set up as a spin-off separate company, is actually getting some good wins. The electricity contracts, there are several examples, but they are actually starting to succeed and save councils quite a bit of money, so that's been good. Two other motions of note. The 25% increase in board members' fees was certainly contested. I must admit, the mayor, your mayor, was aggravated somewhat by the public report in Daily, quoting the chief executive of the LGA is saying they haven't had an increase since 2014. Now, I, as much as anyone, would recall that there was a very substantial increase in 2018, because I published an electoral leaflet which was highly critical of the board member allowance going up by a multiple of 7 times. And they were coming back this year for all of the board members to get an increase of a further 25%. So look, I did speak, there was a mover and seconder as usual, unthinkingly or otherwise, and I spoke against it. The prime recipient of the pay rise, Mayor Evans of Charles Sturt, left the room with her 3 votes, because the largest councils get 3, goes down to 2 and 1 according to size. And the vote was then...
So do we only have one?
We have 3.
We have 3.
Yeah. So the large councils carry 3, the middle councils carry 2, the very small councils carry 1 vote. So it is...
But one person delivers the 3 votes.
That's correct. A bundle of votes, if you like. You have a different coloured car that you hold up. That's happened. In fact, it's done electronically now. One day we'll get to that as well. So all of the votes flash up immediately on screen. I also pointed out that there's a lot of justification in the LGO report about corporate boards these days. You've got the NAB and you've got all these BHP and Santos, they're earning big money, those people. And I pointed out, we're not advertising on the open market for people with brilliant legal and financial knowledge. There are only about 20 or so people who can possibly be elected to the board, because they have to be elected to the Metropolitan Committee first, or the council, the Country Council Committee first. And out of those people, you can get onto the board and become president. So it's not necessarily the best and brightest of Australia, or it's very capable people on those committees. Anyway, I'm dragging it out to drag out the suspense, but in the result, the vote was lost 51-49. So with the conflict of interest person out of the room, that made all the difference. Very close vote. The other one that's of interest is that there was the climate emergency motion. Now, whatever you think of your mayor, I actually wanted the investigation into better environmental management to get up. And I had a very strong sense that the climate emergency part of the motion, just as we experienced in Merion Council, was going to antagonise a lot of voters. And I have seen it in previous general meetings. There is massive antagonism to any climate change policy in the country councils.
What was the vote for that? That was close, wasn't it?
It was close. So I moved an amendment to take out the climate emergency reference and keep all of the pro-environmental management bits in there. The amendment was not accepted. It was considered contrary to the motion. We then had the vote and it was lost 52-51. So I'm sure there'll be plenty of people concerned about the environmental aspects who will come back maybe to the next meeting or something like that. In fact, this council might even do it.
Well, with encouragement, happy to help.
Councillor.
Mr. Mayor, the Work Health and Safety Report, we've had a spike. And spikes will happen, and Mr. Lyons has probably got an explanation for the spike, but what worries me is in the lead up to this, the reports haven't really indicated that the spike was building. And I'd like some explanation here for
Mr. Lyons.
It's been a spike, you're right. And can't explain why the spikes happened. We've been concerned, we've looked at every single one of these LTIs, all sort of have what we call 48-hour reports and investigations. And the general managers go to them, so they are quite serious. And they've happened. There have been people that have stepped down from a truck and stepped into a dislodged paver, broken a bone in their foot, these sorts of things. So it's not people being silly, it's people that have just had a bit of bad luck.
It's not working, not working from home.
That one was on work. So the, one of the things though that we have advocated and we're also doing is rather than look at this data on just a 12 months, which is useful, it's a better arrangement to look at it over 3 years. So that we have a rolling period and then all the good work that we did at the end of last year is not lost. And it looks like we've had a terrible year when in fact, when we look at it over the long term, we've made awesome progress and I'm very genuine about that. When I started in Marion in 2016, our lost time injury frequency rate was 28. Our spike puts it up still sub 20. And that's just for this little period. If we go without LTIs, it will further pull that down and down. We are taking them seriously. There's also a delay, of course, with the reporting from the scheme. So until they get formally accepted by the scheme, we can't report them in the graphs that you see in figure 3 and 4. But the actual incidents have been recorded in the front.
Just following up from that, I'll come back to Mr. McKenzie in a moment. But Mr. Lyons, you're saying that we've done very well, but it looks like in terms of the injury frequency rate is actually worse than the group average by a long shot just recently. So, well, are we doing better or not?
We're doing much better than we did do 4 years ago, and there's no disguising this. This is a spike. We've had a number in a short period.
Yeah.
To be fair,
this council wasn't even monitoring this 4 years ago. And we only have a 4 year term, and you're saying we should look at over 3 years. Well, it's not really practical for us to react as a board in terms of what could be a big issue for our APAS.
Yes, I'm not sure that would be a good idea, because if there is a spike, we want to know so that we can ask the questions.
So if I can clarify, you still get the same data, you still know that there's been a spike, but when we're looking at trends as to the overall performance of the organisation, we're taking a longer view rather than seeing a 3 month spike, and we take it in the context of what's happening.
Well, it could be both, couldn't it? We don't have to scrap one measurement just because we've had another.
Definitely want to provide both.
Ms. McKenzie?
Through the chair, I just wanted to point out that in the October report, although the claims hadn't been accepted yet, it was highlighted that there had been 5 injuries at the time and only 2 had been accepted. So we did try and give some early indication in last month's report, but they have been accepted now, just to clarify that point from Councillor Hull.
Fair enough. Councillor Garn?
Where
did he go? Oh, what a minute.
No, he's still there.
Oh.
He's just
pretty. He just disappeared. He doesn't
like us.
Come in,
Councillor Gard.
Call in,
Councillor Gard.
There's
Councillor. Unmuted. He's trying. He's talking to you, sir. Got it. Sorry, I just did have a question further on the LGA subject, and that was, I noted that, I think I'm right, memory serving me well, that there's something like a 2.4 million average advantage that councils have from benefit from the LGA, whereas ours, I think, tallies to something like $1 million, if I recall, Ms. Twaits's figures. Is there any sort of brief explanation for the gap? It doesn't matter so much that we might be below the average, but we seem to be a very long way below the average.
I can give you one very clearly. In summary, the LGA has improved over the time that I've been mayor. We have been heavy critics. They actually have made improvements, and we can still see the benefits of that, along with some scope for continuing criticism. Probably one of the most grievous sources of potential complaint at the moment is that the fact that they keep putting out these so-called audited accounts of how much they're benefiting councils. And there are millions and millions of dollars, for example, all of the road funding that we get from the federal government, because the LGA one time asked for it, they claim credit for that. So a lot of things.
It's called marketing.
Yeah, it's called marketing. Marketing, that's right. So the lower figure is probably more realistic.
The thing is that the figure that the LGA puts out is an average for all the councils. It's not for every single council receives that much. So some councils receive more and some do receive less.
Shall we keep going, Councillor Gardner?
All right. Yeah, I guess just one brief nudge there is I just wanted to check that there wasn't a major area where we're not benefiting, which lowers our own figure that much below the average. If it's something that's sort of notional because they broad brush it, well, then that's the other part of the answer, I guess.
Anything other than broad brush, Ms. Bates, you're aware of? Okay. Well, if there's nothing else, those four motions, putting on blockwise in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you. So, just help me out. We're conscious of the time. Yes, well, I'm wondering if these, just give me an indication, members. We do have a lot of confidentials to get through. Shall we just move straight to them?
We've got to go into the other meeting to do the
confidentials. Yes, I know, that means we won't come back. But in reality.
Well, your motion should move pretty quickly.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Chilling if you still are. Did we find out?
Yes, the 20th of November
changed. Oh, I'm sorry, we've thrown a party or something.
It's okay, it was a very enjoyable 14 months.
Thank you, former Deputy Mayor. One of the longest terms of Deputy Mayor we've ever had. Several years.
I'm declaring a conflict.
So we're dealing with, on page 322, Council Assessment Panel, which I propose to move with some amended wording, which Ms. Moritz might have to put up on the screen. And Councillor Telfer, perceived conflict as a member of CAP.
And just to confirm, I've got a perceived as deputy, but I will remain in the chamber.
Perceived and in the room, Councillor Schilling. So the you'll see the amended wording. It won't be there in minutes, but it's just there so you can see clarification that's been offered from what was in the agenda. If you're on the CAP, you're ineligible to get a consultancy or employment at the City of Marion, which gives you a financial benefit beyond the fee prescribed by council. So we give the independent members a sitting fee, including the chair. We give the elected member who's on there a particular fee, but it's beyond that. And the explanation is set out there. It's to prevent, I'll start getting into
you don't have the vernaculars,
but I think I'll just leave it as that. Would anyone like to move that? Councillor Masika, you wish to speak to it?
Thanks for your worship. That I'd like to move the motion. Yes, it's written about further comments, which is very straightforward, it's very clear, and it makes the matter straight that we shouldn't be paying them for any consultant fee for the people who are supposed to give up advice or decision which we expect them to do while already being paid by the council to do that.
Oh, thank you. Councillor Howell, second.
I have a second. I assume something like this has happened.
Yes, at the last Urban Planning Committee meeting, we discovered that Mr. Davies, one of the excellent members of the CAP, had been offered a $10,000 consultancy without tender for reviewing our strategic documents, and elected members, on the whole, didn't think there was really much value in that exercise. So you can see how there might be a need to restrict that sort of activity.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor, and I was happy to support Councillor Masika, and I hope Mr. Lyons has taken this on board. This is as much as an internal issue within the corporation as it is for us to deal with. I'm not sure how that proposal even happened, to be quite frank. And I don't know why Councillor Telfer left the room, because elected members can't be in this position anyway, because if you do, you're out of council. So you know, there's no conflict of interest in my observation. But look, this tidies it up, and I welcome the Mayor's suggested motion.
Anyone speaking against? Then I'll move and put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hands. So carried unanimously, thank you. Over the page, we've got Aboriginal Heritage Advice. I draw Council's attention to the fact that not only is the owner of Lot 707 at Marion Road proposing to sell the land, but Council has an easement along the eastern side, which is a pathway alongside the river. This is why it wants to speak to that.
Development
around
the easement is actually
placed in a
water easement, not council, but there is definitely an easement there.
Oh, sorry, I was acting on council advice. Mr. Lyons, did we end up putting any expression of interest in relation to that land?
Mr. Delacombe, still going to?
Thank you, through the chair. Yes, we did, in the way that we discussed.
That was last Thursday, wasn't it? Yeah.
Sorry, was that a question to me?
I think we were needed to submit that by Thursday, and I assume that was done.
Yes, as so, occurred.
Yeah. When you say in the way that we discussed, that's not something I'm aware of. So unless it's a confidential matter, I think the council needs to be informed.
Thank you for the clarification, Chair. No, look, in discussion with exec, it was determined that an EOI be submitted in line with the requested EOI from the property company JLL, who are acting on behalf of ILSC in Ghana, and really to a quite a narrow confine of interest, which is to help potentially clarify or strengthen council's ability to provide the shared use path along that side of the river to help potentially establish a buffer from the river to protect it from any future development, which we see as being beneficial to not only City of Marion residents, but also to Ghana and any future developer, as a kind of de-risking exercise, so that if they chose to develop that land, they could have more confidence that a sufficient and protected zone be established.
I see. So apologies. It may be that the Mayor, on the information he received, confused two things, an SA Water easement and the fact that we have a path, which indeed could be improved between the river and the development. And so an expression of interest has covered our interest there. So accordingly, given the sensitivity of the land, as one can see in the brief explanation there, that I'm putting to council is that we need to be well armed beforehand if there are going to be any issues of sensitivity arise. So if anyone would like to move that, yes, Councillor Crossland.
My question would be, so if a developer purchases the land and makes a planning application, isn't this something that's considered by the relevant planning authority at that time, which is likely to be the state government? Because we don't do this for other pieces of land, so I'm just wondering who normally does these checks, or isn't it a obligation on the developer to do these checks?
It will be that there certainly is an obligation on the developer if there's a site of Aboriginal significance. but I suspect that council would have a role to play. Mr. Delacombs, what can you tell us?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, to reinforce your point, the onus is definitely on the developer as a part of their diligence to be aware of what they are getting themselves into. However, given council does have a path that is in part encroaching on this land and is seeking to potentially upgrade that path in the future, that's probably what sets it apart from other pieces of land in terms of council having an interest and wanting to do a bit more thorough research.
So my second question would be, if you've already submitted an expression of interest, haven't you already conducted this type of investigation on that piece of land already?
Through the chair, no, that hasn't occurred because the expression of interest was known to us, to myself and the ability to respond in a manner on behalf of council at relatively short notice. And so the expression of interest doesn't offer any solid grounds for council to pursue or not to pursue. It's simply an invitation, us putting up our hand as an invitation to be involved in the conversation. And now we have a chance to do some more research before any further decisions would need to be made.
I suppose the follow-on question there, Mr. Delacombs, is that if this progresses and it would be something that council has an option to buy, would this not form part of the due diligence already, or does it need a council resolution to tell you to do it?
I would have to take some advice from perhaps Mr. Lyons in terms of council admin's authority in regards to EOIs of this size and scale. They haven't listed a price, and so, look, I'm not sure if it's something that we would generally need to come back to council for. I would suggest that it might be something that we would, and so it doesn't necessarily form something apart we would do in any case.
So just to the reason I asked that question, if the EOI comes back and we can't buy it, it's not even an option, is there any need to have this additional expense?
The intent of the, so without answering your last question, the intent of the EOI was just to put our hand up and put it in the mix, and any purchase we envisage will just be a peppercorn, it would just be a land transfer. So we actually thought it was we misled the mayor, we actually thought it was a council easement. It's not, it's an SA Water easement, we've learned that since. But we do have our path there, and we just wanted to stick our hand up and say we want to be in the mix. That's what we've done so far.
So then the second question, if it is a land transfer, do we need to do this? Or if the Ghana are giving it to us for continued ongoing use, which it's been used for years, does it need this investigation?
I can reiterate that we've put our hand up just to be in the mix and see what happens. We may be in the mix, we may not.
All right, do we have questions?
Yeah, question. Mr. Mayor, given that the sense of this made for the council is that a buffer zone, if you like, between the proposed development on the site, whatever that might be, and the Sturt River, and Mr. Lyons is quite rightly identified there as that SA Water easement going through there. You might remember there was a big sewage still there a little while back. Well, that's where it bubbled up from that very dry. So it's well understood that that's there. The Friends of Warrapringa certainly want that buffer zone. Jeffrey Newchurch is of the view that that's essential to be in keeping with the nature of the place. So I'm not sure what this is all about, because and the question is, in terms of the developer, and could actually be the Ghana community themselves for the village, which they've just got a significant grant amount of money for in the state budget. It's a matter for them. Can I ask the question? Could this motion, if approved, cause some sensitivity between the Aboriginal community and this council, if it's really unnecessary, and particularly if it's the determination of them as to what they do with their own land?
Well, the legal advice will be held by council. only, so it's just to guide our steps forward if there are any.
This is a public document we're talking about right now, though, isn't it?
Well, the motion is clear. There aren't any other questions. Councillor Sickley.
Yeah, thanks, Your Worship. Well, mine is it alluded probably a statement to which will attract some response from administration, that probably the motion itself is not an issue, but the timing, that is, I find it quite an issue for me, because if we put an expression of interest and we start to conduct a police kind of investigation and we are not off, it's the worst stage of taxpayer or ratepayers' money. Or if we are being accepted for the expression of interest, then we can come back and find out this one there. So I was trying to find out, well, is there a way we can put on hold and wait for the decision of expression of interest and then come back and determine what to step forward? Because this one is a potential for conflict between the council and the Aboriginal community. I can see there's a potential that's coming. Because they can view that it's coming from Francis' point of view. I can't say no, but that one, there's that possibility, and I'm quite worried about that one.
Well, the matter hasn't been moved. Either someone might want to move the motion, but if they don't, it could either be put on an agenda later,
yes.
Or it could be deferred specifically, but I'm in your hands, members. What do you want to do, Councillor Seaver?
Yes, Your Worship, I was going to propose that the motion is good, but if you can defy it for the timing until we hear expression of interest, whether we are in or we are
not. Mr. Bates, how would you word that?
Defer until the outcome of the expression of interest.
Defer the item.
Yes.
Until the outcome of the expression of interest. Our expression of interest is not. Very well, is that, that's moved as a second.
Can I just clarify something now? Because my understanding is that if we do proceed with the expression of interest, part of our due diligence will be to, as part of the normal process, not a separate motion, will be to answer some of these questions. So I just wonder, is there any actual need to even defer it when staff undertaking has already been made that they would do this type of inquiry?
Well,
if we're taking additional land.
I appreciate your trust and staff. But it's been moved now, so let's deal with the motion. Is that defer of the item seconded? If not, then the motion lapses, and I suspect there's not much support for it. So let's just keep moving. We have the beginning of the confidential items. I must admit, I've had, as I'm sure all of you have, had a good look at the reasons for confidentiality, and most of them do involve public chief executive stuff, which relates to a person's affairs. There are elements of commercial information in all of them. So would somebody like to move the cover reports, that is the going into confidence in respect of each matter on block? Councillor Telfer. Seconded Councillor Hutchinson. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. So, is there a technological fix to do?
Yeah, so this meeting will finish.
Yes.
And we'll then log on to the confidential items meeting that I've set for 8:30. That can start obviously after 9. The waiting room is enabled, so those joining the meeting might be put in the waiting room to join them.
Okay. So we adjourn until the commencement of the next meeting.